SBS Radio.
Wadamuli and welcome to NITV Radio. I'm Kerry Lee Harding, and coming up for you now, we are joined by Ray Johnston, science and technology journalist. So it's time to yarn all things science and technology. Welcome to the program, Ray.
Oh, thanks for having me back, sis. I'm excited to talk science and technology with you.
Let's get into it for today. Now, first up, I understand there's a phone app apparently that's been used to track a sneaky fox. What can you tell us about this one?
Yeah, it's not what this app was originally intended for, tracking foxes, but hey, technology to the rescue in this situation. So I'm going to take you back a bit though. When you go for a swim at the beach, when I go for a swim at the beach, you know, we're usually keeping one eye on our stuff on the sand. You know, I know that's what I'm doing, but I don't expect anyone to be nicking my stuff to be a fox. That's not what I'm thinking. So no. A family in Adelaide, they saw a fox run off with one of their shorts. And those shorts in the pocket was an iPhone. And, you know, you'd think, oh, well, that's it. I've lost the iPhone. No chance of getting that back. But on your iPhone, you can turn on the Find My iPhone feature in case it's ever lost or stolen, and it brings up a GPS signal and a map that shows you the phone's location. So these folks, they grabbed one of their other phones, pulled up the app and started tracking down this fox, and they followed the signal as the fox ran around, which sounds like a bit of fun, really, ended up tracking it back to its den in the sand dunes.
Wow.
The fox wasn't there anymore, but the shorts were, so they got back the shorts and the keys and the phone, and they found a whole bunch of other stuff it had stolen as well, which was mainly thongs. This fox just really loved taking off with people's thongs. And look, foxes aren't unusual in Adelaide's coastal dunes at all, so I reckon locals need to watch their gear a bit more closely and make sure they turn Find My iPhone on in the future.
Gotta love that story, a sneaky fox there, Ray. Now we go from talking about sneaky foxes to talking about honey eaters. What can you tell us about this?
Yeah, so just like humans learn to speak, you know, birds learn to sing, you know, by hanging out with older birds of the same species. So they risk losing that skill if adults become too rare, and if endangered birds can't learn how to sing properly, it seriously impacts on their ability to communicate. So we've got the regent honeyeater, which is endangered at the moment, and they think that losing this song, losing their song culture, is one of the reasons that they're not breeding as much, because females will avoid the males if they're singing unusual songs. And there's been new research that shows in places where there were still, you know, reasonable numbers of regent honeyeaters, the males are singing these rich and complex songs that they've passed down for generations. But where the birds are rare, the males are singing really simple or just totally incorrect songs that had nothing to do with their culture of the honey eaters. So, for example, 18 male regent honey eaters, or around 12% of the total population, they're the only ones that are able to copy the songs of other bird species as well, which is really, really interesting. But not being able to communicate with their own species, we don't see this in wild animals. And it's really safe to assume now that regent honeyeaters, they're now so rare that some young males will never find an older male teacher to teach them what their songs are. And this study also showed that regent honeyeaters that are born in captivity, they have totally different songs to the wild birds. So those unusual songs of birds bred in captivity, yeah, they make them less attractive to wild birds when they're eventually released. So we need to work out a bit of a strategy to teach those young male captive regent honey eaters to sing the same songs as the wild birds. And they've started playing them audio recordings so that they can bring back a bit of that song culture and attract females. It's really fascinating stuff.
Now we go from talking about regent honey eaters losing their song culture to changes in river flows that are having a damming impact on platypus.
Yeah, and damming's a bit of a sad pun there because it is because of the dams. And, you know, these large dams, they're having a serious impact on downstream platypus populations. And it was researchers from the University of New South Wales Sydney Platypus Conservation Initiative, which is a really great initiative, and that sits in the Centre for Ecosystem Science. And they say that the natural flow of the river needs to be copied on dammed rivers if platypus populations are to, you know, recover in areas below large dams. And this has been done before, and it is successful. And we see it in some rivers around the Snowy River Hydro Scheme, where they have, you know, looked at ways of replicating what the natural river flow will be, and the populations of platypus aren't as impacted in those areas. But, you know, the way that dams are managed, like the timing and the volume of the release of the water, that can have a significant impact on the platypus living downstream. And we're seeing at the moment with Warragamba Dam, with the overflow from the flooding, you know, just these huge torrents of water, you know, being released from the top of the dam, that will have a significant impact on the platypus population. And knowing this information is really important because most platypus alive today are living on dammed rivers. And it's an endangered species in South Australia, a threatened species in Victoria. It's been recommended to be listed as a threatened species across Australia, including in New South Wales, where that flooding is happening right now. And, you know, river management and land clearing and extreme droughts are the biggest impacts on platypus. So knowing that better water management can help is really important, and that we can release water from dams at the right time of year. You know, we can make sure that there's enough water flowing to create permanent water holes that are refuges for platypus. That's really important as well. Just understanding how to manage those rivers, we can protect the future of this species, which is a really positive thing to know.
And we can do better, by the sounds of it, Ray, there as well, for our platypuses in the environment. Now we go to talking about safety signs that are actually helping a little South Australian penguin colony. What can you tell us about this, Ray?
Yeah, it's a little by name and little by nature. They are a colony of little penguins, and there's only 16 of them that are living on Granite Island. I know, there's not many of them left there. So there's been a whole bunch of researchers from Flinders University, and they teamed up with the Department of Environment and Water and Green Adelaide to help protect the population of these little penguins. And they've started by making new signs. And you wouldn't think that signs would have a huge impact, but it actually is. It's working, because there's been a big increase in, you know, dogs and bikes and, you know, people wandering around on the island, you know, searching for the penguins, using torches with white light on it, which can have negative impacts on the penguin population. And, you know, since 2016, there's been this huge increase in this kind of activity. So they've been studying these penguins closely for years. And the information that was gathered about them during these studies, they used to be collected by guides that would host nightly tours of Granite Island, and they would be conducted in a safe and responsible way that protected the penguins. But, you know, we've seen with the combination of, you know, COVID-19 restrictions on gatherings and, you know, attacks by foxes, and, you know, the nightly tours just had to be stopped. So local volunteers have all come together and they have rescued this research program, which is lovely, including making these new signs. And it's all about education. It's letting people know how important and vulnerable the little colony is. And the signs give information about feeding and molting and mating cycles, but most importantly, to not disturb the birds and don't expose them to that white torchlight, and don't let dogs near them. them. And it's worked. It's working. They've shown that the little penguins are breeding now and they're seeing more eggs and people are being more careful. So that's a really positive outcome for these little signs on this little island for these little penguins.
Gotta love that story, Ray. Gotta love a good penguin story right here on NITV Radio. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the program today. Ray Johnston, science and technology journalist. Thanks again.
Oh, anytime, sis. Thank you.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.